Good morning. I want to greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. Certainly, I've been blessed to be here this morning. And as I thought about the Sunday school lesson and the connection again with the message, it's just overwhelming. I had looked at the lesson earlier in the week and wondered what connection it had to the sermon today, but anyway, I'd like to continue talking about the subject of separation, being separated unto God. The title of the message this morning is A Heart After God. I'm going to be obviously using the board this morning, and hopefully everybody can see it well enough. Just a little bit of maybe refreshing our minds on what we talked about the last time. I'm not sure, I didn't look when I preached last. It's been a little while. Talked about some of the foundations of separation, I believe, and just tried to give an introduction there of what separation is and why it is, why we need to be separated, why God has called us to be separated. The title of the message is A Heart After God. I'd like to think about our heart. And you can relate this subject of the heart to many other things besides separation. It relates to all of life. It relates to worship very, very closely. And you think about the word heart, it's mentioned in the Bible many, many times, over 900. And almost all of those times, it is not talking about this thing that pumps blood. There is a few times that it does. But it's talking about something else, and it has to do with our will. It has to do with our desires. And as we get going here, we'll look a little bit closer at some of that and how it works. Now, drawings sometimes are maybe kind of silly, or I don't know if you want to call them that, but it helps me to get a picture in my mind of exactly how a thing is, even though it's maybe very, very primitive. I got the idea of steps from a number of verses. I was actually kind of surprised how many verses are in the Bible about steps. And I've used this in Romans class. Maybe some of you young people have been in Romans class and have seen some of this. So sorry about that, but it won't hurt you to get a refresher course on that. In Romans 4:12, it's talking about Abraham and the father of circumcision, to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had yet being uncircumcised. 1 Peter 2:21, for hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow in his steps. And so that kind of gave me the idea of drawing these steps and these men on this drawing. Maybe I'll write some more up here. I didn't quite get finished with this. (Clears throat) these men here too. Let's name this one Will. And Walt. Now, this man could have lots of different names, and so could this man maybe, but for the purpose of our talk here this morning, we'll leave it at that. Now, all of us enter into life. If we could put all of life on this board, it would be very large. But all of us enter into life at some point in this stairs. And some of us with godly training enter in pretty high up on the stairs. Some people enter at the end of life, even down here. That does not affect the end result. Because if the heart is a heart of faith, we can still enter the house of God. Now, there's many, many people that enter at this point and end up experiencing the wrath of God. Many, many people do that. And it's simply, it's very simple. This is not complicated to understand, really. Faith is the energizer, or it's the power that helps us to respond rightly to God. Now, all of us come in contact with God. We could call this God, or Jesus, the unchangeable God. And all of us come in contact with God through our lives. We have God-conscious experiences. We come in contact with Him in various ways. We see His will in His Word, or we have an experience that maybe it's a near-death experience, and it helps us to see who we are and who God is. And we come in contact with God, and we have a responsibility at that point, and that point is here. We have a responsibility to respond either in faith or in unbelief is the two responses that we can have. As we respond in faith, it takes us upward. It takes us toward the house of God. Now, I would like to talk just a little bit about the results. We could spend a lot of time on this, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the results of faith and unbelief in our lives. Unbelief brings, probably first of all, brings doubt. And we begin to doubt, did God really mean what He says? And so then it puts doubt in our minds, and it brings us down down toward the wrath of God. Another thing that is very quickly comes into place is fear. Those things are a part of resisting God. Another thing that is always attached is pride. And then I'm going to put one more here, and we could go on with this list a long ways. But I'm going to write it like this. There's a whole list of self sins, and we're just going to call it self-ish. Maybe we'll use another color on the other side here. I forget what I'm supposed to write over here. Faith and belief are very closely associated, and perfect love casts out fear. And we're going to put humility here. And then down here, we're going to put compassion. Like I said, this is very simple. It's not something you've never heard before. But the person that chooses unbelief goes down away from God, away from what God desires. And as he goes away from God, he begins to experience the results of unbelief and the wrath of God. It's a very predictable result of unbelief, of not obeying God. Really, faith and unbelief are not really that complicated. Faith we cannot separate from obedience. Just simply obeying. When God asks us to do something, and God asks us to do some hard things, there's no doubt about it. We could think of a lot of things that God asks us. Maybe one of the hardest things for us to understand is the question that God has sometimes for us to leave family, to forsake everything. And in separation, that is one of the hardest questions for us to answer. Why would God want us to separate from family? And sometimes we struggle with that. Maybe those of us who come from godly homes don't have to struggle with that like people that do not come from godly homes. That is a big struggle for them. And it's hard for them to say yes to God. And that's really what faith is. They see what God asks of them, and we just simply say yes or no to God. And pretty much describes faith and unbelief. Now, as Wolf goes down this path, he begins to wear these things. He begins to wear doubt. And he begins to wear fear. And he begins to wear pride. And he becomes very selfish. Let's do this again. Now the same is true for faith. For Will. Let's call him Will instead of faith. As he says yes to God, he begins to wear these things. I've got the wrong color here. Maybe this one. He begins to wear belief. And love. And humility. And compassion. Now, I have a couple of questions that I want you to think about. Is will closer to God than what won't is? What do you think? In this drawing, he isn't really. You look at the unchangeable God and the distance, there's not really a lot of difference. The Apostle Paul says that God is not far from every one of us. And the point that I'd like to make with that is the only difference between these two is that won't doesn't do God's will, and will does. And it's the difference of a heart of faith and a heart of unbelief. Will has the same opportunity to say no to God as won't does. Won't has the same opportunity to say yes to God as what will did. It's really, nothing is really different. Now, it is true that in life, there are some different opportunities. But when you boil it all down, really, all of us have the same choices to make when it comes to believing God or not believing what God says. It really becomes very simple. Now, another question. Who has the easiest choice? What do you think about that? Who can choose the easiest? Is it will or won't? Probably won't, right? Because he doesn't have to obey God. He's not obeying God. And his whole life is a downhill. It's downhill. Gravity pulls him down. But I said in the beginning there that faith energizes. And I really believe that our faith energizes us, and it reverses that gravity that would pull us down. Think about some of the Old Testament prophecies of our day, of today, with salvation, are so beautiful. There's one in Micah, I believe it is, that says that the people of God are going to flow up to the Mount of God. How many things flow up? Gravity tends to pull down, doesn't it? But that picture there of people flowing into the Mount of God is people that are energized by faith, and gravity no longer controls them. Now, I've got another question for you to think about, and I think this is important for us to contemplate a little bit. On this stairs, where did the thief on the cross find himself? Where was his entry point? Where do you think? Clear down here at the bottom, right? He was actually experiencing the wrath of God, judgment for his sin. Now, did the thief on the cross get saved? Well, obviously. What was the thing that saved him? Instead of not believing God like the other thief did, he believed God. And he also experienced the house of God. Is experiencing the house of God. That is, we sometimes criticize what other people are doing or not doing and say, well, if they're Christians, they should, you know, they should do or should not do what they're doing. And that probably is true. But that gives me no excuse for not performing. Absolutely none. All has to do with my heart and my will. Now, faith is the gift of God. Faith is given to us by God. But it also has an awful lot to do with my will. What I decide to do. How I decide to respond to the things in life. All right, I've got a few scriptures here. Maybe I'll just read them. I have them printed out here. I think we'll talk about the ones going down first of all. Romans 1:21, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Jeremiah 11:8, yet they obeyed not, nor inclined their ear, but walked every one in the imagination of their evil heart. Therefore will I bring upon them all the words of this covenant, which I commanded them to do, but they did them not. And Ephesians 4:18, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. And then Romans 2:5, but after their hardness and impenitent heart, treasurest up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. Now you can see a progression in those verses. First of all, just not thankful, not recognizing God for who he was, for who he is. And then there's the thing of obedience, not obeying and not inclining the heart, not wanting to hear what God says. And then there's a part that begins to happen. I'm not sure if God makes it happen or if it's just an automatic thing that happens, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God. That is a part of the progression away from God. Now, some verses going up, and again, we start with repentance. Psalm 51:10, and there's many, many verses we could look at, but just a few here. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. That step of repentance is very first for us to begin to go up toward God. Psalm 119:112, I have inclined my heart to perform thy statutes always. And then here we have obedience again instead of disobedience. Psalm 84:2, my soul longeth, yea, even fainteth for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. And then Matthew 5:8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Notice that progression again. There's, first of all, it's like we have to take our heart and turn it toward God. And the psalmist there says, I have inclined my heart. There's something to do with your will. But then notice this, that his heart and his flesh cry out for God. See, there's a progression there. And then, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The result. What does all of this talk about heart have to do with separation? One of the things that often happens, and we see it happen, and we hear this probably pretty often, but the winds of the world blow the curtains in the church. Now, my question is, should they? After we've been talking about this, should the winds of the world blow the curtains in the church? No. Because the heart is getting its source from something else. Or is it? When that happens, it is, I believe, a hard issue. Separation is a hard issue. Now, we know people that wear all the right clothes, or maybe we don't, but probably most of us do. Know people that wear the right clothes, say the right things, go to church on Sunday, but have a rotten heart. And that's too bad. And that's probably some of the reason why we do not like to talk about separation. We don't like to get... I think it's an excuse, really. See, he's wearing a suit coat and he's not right with God. I think it's an excuse. That's what I think. But separation is a heart issue, and it must be that we're changed on the inside, first of all. That it must be that way. And it must continue that way. It always, for us to wear these virtues, and many more besides that, but for us to wear those, we need to have a heart of faith. It must be that way. It's not something that we can just put on without having the heart of faith. It cannot happen. It does not happen. We will fail if we try to do it in our own strength. A few more scriptures. Maybe let's turn to some of these. 1 Peter 3. We're going to start here with the women. First Peter 3, and let's just begin right at the first verse there. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting the hair, of wearing of gold, or of putting on of apparel. This is what I want. But let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price. Now, there's a non-conformity issue here. Do not adorn yourselves with all this list of things, but adorn the heart. And that's what we're talking about with this wearing the virtues there, and they come by faith in God, by a belief in God. And again, just refreshing in our minds that faith is not, it's not just a belief, but it's a desire, a strong desire to please God. That's why Will is headed the direction that he is because of his desire to please God. And incidentally, Won't is heading downhill because he does not have that desire, does not have that faith to please God. Now, faith is more than that. Faith is also obedience. It's not enough just to say that, yes, I will do what you want me to do, God, but you have to actually do it. Very obvious that that has to be a part of it. All right, let's go to Romans 12. And again, I just want to pick out one thought here. I'm not trying to dissect the whole passage here, but Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren. This isn't necessarily to the sisters, although it is, but it's primarily, I was impressed with this again. He says, brethren. I beseech you, therefore, brethren. Often when we talk about nonconformity, we look over here and, yeah, the sisters, they better. But this here says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And we could put in there the heart. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. We know, we understand that we cannot please God only by outward conformity. Separation must be far more than that. I'd like if you would turn to Isaiah. I kind of feel like I'm jumping all over here, but Isaiah 3. I'm going to read a couple other verses that talk about the heart. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. That's Proverbs 4, verse 23. Here's one in Ezekiel that I think is interesting. Ezekiel 11, 19. I will give them one heart, and will put a new spirit within you. And I will take the stony heart out of their flesh, and I will give them an heart of flesh. Here's another one from Deuteronomy 30, verse 6. And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. No, I wasn't turning to Isaiah here. Isaiah 3. And verse 16, this is about the daughters of Zion. Moreover, the Lord saith, excuse me. Because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, and their calls, and their round tires like the moon, the chains, the bracelets, and the mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments of the legs, and the headbands, and the tablets, and the earrings, the rings, and the nose jewels, the changeable suits of apparel, and the mantles, and the wimples, and the crisping pins, the glasses, and the fine linen, and the hoods, and the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of a sweet smell, there shall be a stink, and instead of a girdle, a rent. Instead of well-set hair, baldness. Instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, and burning instead of beauty. Now, I might come back to this scripture sometime later, but there's many things. I'm not sure what all these things are. don't know for sure, but I do know that probably especially this side of the house over here can find all kinds of things to put on that are very interesting, to say the least. But the reason that God was going to judge them was because of their heart. He says, because they are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks. They put on these things. But the reason was for judgment was because it was in their heart. And incidentally, what's in the heart pretty soon starts getting worn on the outside. That's the way it is. Now I think I have time here to do this next thing. We're gonna erase all this. Hopefully we don't knock this thing over. Keep going with this, with both of these lists for a while here, but you get the idea. When we look at Christianity, and I think it's important that we keep this eternal perspective in view as we think about the subject of separation. In God's view, the sheep and the goats, it's not hard for him to tell the difference. And at the end of the world, in the judgment, it's going to be you goats go to the left, you sheep to the right. It's going to be so clear cut to God. And I think it's good for us to keep that in mind. And the reason that it's so clear to him is because of what we were talking about that heart of faith. Don't you think that God knows if you're believing, if you are doing what he asks you to do? Of course he does. Don't you think he knows if you're not doing that? In God's perspective, you know, we look, and in this in this middle, we could put in all the different brands of Mennonites, if you will, and all the different, the Amish and maybe the Baptist and all the other people that say they believe God, nominal Christianity. But don't you think, if we think about it, don't you think God knows who the goats are and the sheep are? Oh, yeah. He knows. There is, it's very clear to him. It's very clear to him. And I think it's important that in separation, in thinking about this, that we understand, that we keep in mind this eternal view of God's perspective. And it's a wide gap between the two. It all has to do with our direction of travel. It's not that. We face the same things. We have to struggle to pay bills the same way the unbelievers do. But there's a totally different perspective on our life. We face the same opportunities. We face the same, many things are the same. We face the effects of the curse on our world, just like the just and the unjust. It's all the same. But in the final analysis, it does not matter how I look to others. It doesn't matter if people think I'm righteous or unrighteous. I'm not sure if this is the right way to say it, because sometimes we use this as an excuse. Well, God knows my heart. But he does. He knows where I'm at. He knows how I've been responding. He knows exactly. And in the final analysis, that's what really matters.